welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Morena, Lara.
Hey, Lara.
Morena. How are you?
Yeah, good. How are you?
Oh, look, what a time to be writing a book about political parties and the sceptre about to pass him out, eh? What a time.
Oh,
what
man,
a time.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's a lot to cover off this week. Millie and I were just talking at the start of the show about how excited we are about New York City's new mayor and how it's a nice distraction from the bin fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good kind of blinker on the eye.
what an interesting test that will be now. Like,
yeah.
To what extent that Mamdani can get those policies over the line, because I think a lot of people will be watching that because, yeah, is the antidote to that hate populism actually turning the lens on the billionaires? Is that the case? We'll see if that's the antidote, won't we? Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
A little bit closer to home, there's been some a few dramas this week. Top of a lot of people's mind is the government axing schools' obligations to give effect to the Treaty of Waitangi. I've been doing a bit of reading, and I'm trying really hard to understand what was behind this decision, and it kind of just feels like, is there any other explanation other than racism?
Well, look, a lot of people are pointing to Hobson's Pledge, the kind of anti-treaty lobby group, saying that they lobbied the minister for this.
Mm.
So that's where a lot of people, including Labour, are saying that that's where that came from.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at Erica Stanford's own words, and she was saying that give effect to Te Tiriti o Waitangi is a bit vague. Sometimes it is. Yeah, okay, I can see that point, because for a lot of people, especially people who don't have that kind of broader education about what the treaty is and policy, yeah, they might not know. And so if you're sitting on a school board, it might be that you grew up maybe my generation, maybe a millennial, maybe a Gen Xer, and you haven't had as much opportunity to be educated on that, maybe, I don't know. But I guess you just look it up and read some things.
Yeah, and it seems like a funny... It seems like a funny sort of irony to assume that not a lot of people know about what it means to uphold the Treaty of Waitangi or give effect to. And so the solution to that is to scrap it from education systems.
Yeah. So what Stanford has said is that she's put in place some more specific indicators, but I'm not sure that those are actually in the actual school board requirements. And so one thing that I would note to people is that when you actually have it in your terms of reference, or in your constitutional things that you have to do, one of the things you have to do is give effect to your waitangi. Generally, if that's in some kind of strategy, you have to report on it, you have to reflect on it, you have to think about it. And so to remove that from it being compulsory, of course, some people will still keep it in their school boards. Actually, I imagine that the majority will keep it in there still.
Yes.
But to remove that out of those terms of reference, that means that people will ignore it and it will come back to, does anyone have the energy for this? Is anyone interested in this? And to make it optional means that, there will be those impacts long-term about whether, hey, are we taking a little bit of time to stop and think about what we're doing to give effect to Tiriti? It also removes that as a lever for people who are seeking to serve the Māori equity in different school spaces. So oftentimes, if you're, say, in a university, I don't know who that could be, as an associate professor, if we see something that we need in terms of treaty equity, we can say, oh, well, look, you guys are meant to be giving effect to Tiriti. So, yeah, I feel for the school boards. I feel for those who are kind of in different fights to different things within school board dynamics at the moment. Because that will make it a bit harder for them to advocate for whatever specific thing they were trying to advocate for. And also, this is in the context of a lot of change for schools, for the education sectors, for teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And so it probably just feels like another thing that's making people very tired.
Do you think we'll see, action in those groups that are feeling really put out by this?
It's hard to know what will happen in this space generally, because, of course, in the broader national context, we saw hundreds of thousands of people submit, march, etc., for the Treaty Principles Bill. Or action around the Regulatory Standards Bill. I think people kind of feel a bit more agency and feel a little bit more engaged in terms of fighting for the things that they view are their fundamental values and rights.
Mm.
I imagine that there'll be people that are very keen on Te Tiriti, and actually they'll feel more empowered by all of these attacks and will keep pushing ahead with things.
Mm.
And of course, this is the thing, is that actually most people didn't vote for this government on the basis of, hey, we need to remove Te Tiriti from things. They were focused on things like the economy or some kind of substantive change. So it does seem as though, you know, the broader appetite in the population hasn't been there for these sorts of changes. So ultimately, what we'll see is in the next government, you know, Labor's going to have a lot to unpick and unpack. So we'll see some kind of governmental change at some point, and I imagine a lot of these things will go back in, but the question is when and what priority it is. So, yeah, ultimately, if someone's out there trying to fight for fertility in their institution, in their school or whatever it is, then it's a matter of just kind of keeping it up and going with it, because that's what their fundamental values are.
Yeah, it's so interesting thinking about that, eh? That this sort of policy that's appealing to a very small minority of voters, and I just can't quite wrap my head around what's driving this being a priority in terms of decision making, whether it's sort of ACT pushing things from behind the scenes or if it is lobbying from Hobson's Pledge. It's a bit hard to wrap your head around where it's coming from, eh?
It does feel like it is from those more minority interests, New Zealand Surf Act and those sort of related groups. I imagine this is the thing with the National Party. When you look back at it over the years, you know, we've been reflecting with a lot of pride recently on Jim Bolger's legacy, more around treaty settlements rather than that whole record high Māori unemployment phase. But reflecting on the good things that Jim Bolger did around treaty settlements, and it's like, okay, they seem proud of those sorts of things, and so they seem wanting to lift Māori achievement in schools as part of Erica Stanford's explicit rhetoric. So, you know, it's just kind of confusing. It doesn't necessarily align with National, and it actually doesn't align with a lot of National voters who tend to be on the sort of, like when we look at population studies, sort of into Māori and the treaty, but like they're not, it's not like a big issue for many National voters. You know, it's not kind of on their broad spectrum of things that they care about deeply. So it's very confusing as to what's happening here. Yeah, I suspect it's been quite a bit of lobbying. Generally, if we look on the world stage, undermining Indigenous rights is kind of part of the rich people playbook, kind of the billionaires or industry resource extraction playbook, because the more you undermine Indigenous peoples, the less you have to consult or engage with local people, with mana whenua, with Indigenous rights holders. So it has been part of that broader playbook of the sort of wealthy, sort of neoliberal corporate billionaire right over time. So we've seen it in Chile, we've seen it in a lot of Latin America, this sort of playbook. So yeah, it's tiring, and it is what it is at this stage, but we've got an election next year, so if people are dissatisfied with this, voting is a good thing.
Getting people
out to vote, which will be a big issue given some of the changes to electoral law.
Yeah, that's a whole nother kettle of fish, isn't it? I want to talk briefly about what's happening with Te Pāti Māori, because there's just so much going on that it's almost hard to keep up with the latest dramas. It seems as though John Tamahere has really caused a bit of a stir this week by calling for Mariameno Kapakingi and Takata Ferris to resign. What do you make of his sort of comments on this? And is it appropriate for the Te Pāti Māori president to be inserting himself this publicly?
It's an interesting one, because I've been thinking about back in the day, you know, in the 90s when a political party split up, they couldn't just jump on social media at like 11 p.m. or was it a 1,300 word Facebook post by John Tamahere? And I was like looking at it going, this is so long. This is my job. I've got to read it, got to concentrate. So there's that kind of playing out. And so when things play out on social media, it's quite easy for a journalist to pick it up, right? And so it looks like a lot of drama, a lot of ructions. Yeah, ultimately, look, there's a few things that people can watch for at the moment. The question is, you know, what Mariameno Kapakingi and Tāku Tāferis do. Like, if they do resign, do they form another political party? We're starting to head to that stage where, like, we wouldn't have a by-election. So by-elections aren't held in the 6 months before a general election. So that's sort of March, sort of April would be the cutoff for a by-election being held, like about then, because we're expecting the Prime Minister, normally at the end of January, they come out and say, okay, the election is this date in October, but probably we're expecting September, October, November, somewhere in there. So, and then for the by-election, there's all this stuff that this, you know, the Speaker has to declare the seat vacant, and then it has to be gazetted, and then there's a date, and the electoral, you know, there's all these things that still have to happen. So they're kind of starting to hit a point where they've kind of got to make a decision. Are you going to form a political party or not?
Right.
and it's a, we have to also reflect on the fact that it's a lot of work to have a political party. That's just like, the idea of that makes me tired. So it's like, you know, you've got to raise all this money. You've got to mobilise people. You've got to have that confidence that you would win in, say, like a Tītai Tokoro by-election where Labour have said they'll run Willow Jean Prime, who's well-known. So it's like, and then Te Pāti Māori would run someone. So that's the thing I'm watching for. Like, is there going to be some kind of by-election? There's quite the possibility that, you know, the Te Pāti Māori, the gang gets back together, you know, the iwi chairs forum come in and the heat's taken out of the situation and they all... are happy families, and then at some point John Tamahere kind of resigns or something, quietly. Some quiet things happen.
Yeah.
Still that possibility, but that's kind of what I'm watching for, is like, will we have a by-election? Will someone just go, nah, this is my time. I'm going to stand up for this. So we'll see what happens here. But yeah, like, the back and forth on the social media and the, like, journalists reporting on all. And some of them are jogging out there, some of those journalists, to try to catch people. And so it's just a lot of drama. But those are the things I'm watching for. Will we have a by-election? Will they actually resign? Those are the big things for me.
It's interesting the National Iwi Chairs Forum trying to step in and create some reconciliation or something with the hui, it feels like. So it'll be interesting to see whether that is possible.
Yeah, that's one of those things where, like, what I spend a lot of time doing in my kind of professional life is writing about politics, political parties. And when we have something like, you know, an Indigenous political party, which is quite rare around the world, and you try to articulate, hey, what is it that's different about a Māori party, or in this case, Te Pāti Māori? What is different? Like, what distinguishes it from, say, the Greens or whoever? That's kind of the iwi leaders having a role, and that just being part of Te Ao Māori, because, you know, they've got the rangatiratanga, etc. That is really an interesting kind of point to write about, if I'm honest. Like,
Interesting
to observe that, you know, because if you think about if all that stuff was happening in the Greens, as an example, or an ACT, like, what would happen? I mean, ACT probably some of those like donor elders would probably come in, and there'd probably be some expensive port drunk around the fireplace. That's probably keep going on. But, you know, it's equivalent. But, you know, like, so it's been interesting to see the iwi leaders have a go at trying to resolve this, and it's you know, an interesting point around tikanga Māori.
Yeah, totally. And it's sort of, you mentioned before the sort of media storm around it all. Do you feel like it's been blown up a little bit more than it would be if it was a different political party? Has that got a role in this?
This is really hard because we know that Māori are treated differently in the media, and especially Wahine Māori. Mm-hmm. But then also people are posting Facebook posts and social media posts, and it's making it really easy for journalists to grab things. And if we think of, like, I'm thinking of different scandals like Jamie Lee Ross, and it was a slightly different context, and Gaurav Sharma, those blew up. And what happens is that these things go into a cycle. So one person says a thing, another person says a thing. It feels very immediate. Like, if you put yourself in that kind of... It's like work drama, work stress playing out on a national scale. So you've got the drama, he said this, so I'm going to say this, and then this person said this, and then you're not really sleeping, and then it turns into this big cycle, and the media is feeding it. You know, like, we've seen that play out. We've seen other people do amazingly to stop that cycle from happening. Benjamin Doyle masterclass in stopping that kind of cycle from happening, the sort of people getting worked up type thing around what happened with them and Winston Peters and their party and bits and pieces. So we've seen some really good responses, but some really bad ones over time. So generally, keeping everyone off social media in these situations is a good idea because the media feeds the cycle, and then everything ends up very stressful. And of course, many people in Te Pāti Māori will know that they're being treated a slightly different way. It's dramatic in every case, right?
I do think that's sound advice for any citizen of New Zealand. Just get off social media.
Just keep your drama off social media.
Well, are we banning it for under 16s? Why don't we just ban it for everyone? I mean, I know there's problems with that too.
We would be the happiest country in the world, maybe.
Well,
or maybe it's capitalism, you know, who knows?
Maybe it is.
Who knows?
We'll see.
We will see. Very interesting week in politics.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's always an interesting week in politics, but it always is. Lots to talk about today. So
big
thank
splashes.
You very much, Lara.
Thanks, Lara.
Kia ora, thank you.
We'll talk to you next week.
Bye. Hopefully it'll be things be drama for everyone. Maybe we'll talk about policy.
Maybe. Wouldn't that be nice, eh? All right. Yeah. See you, Lara. Ka kite. Bye.
Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.